Well, good morning, everybody, and welcome. It's Sunday morning, just after 9 o'clock. The sun is shining here again in London, very beautiful. And this is Lizzie and Justin from Third Space, and we are live as we have been every Sunday morning for a very, very long time. Lizzie, back again for Turning Towards Life. And I want to say thank you, Lizzie, to you for writing something for us this week. It's always so moving and powerful to have something that's bubbled forth from you for us to engage with and talk about. And I also want to say welcome to all of you, all the people who are watching us live this morning. Welcome. And those of you who watch or listen later, you're so welcome too. This community of people keeps on growing, and we're so glad, really, really glad to have you with us. It's what makes all of this possible. So good morning. Thanks for coming back to us.
It's really lovely that we're growing in little increments all the time, and it seems to me that someone tells a couple of people about it, maybe once a week or something, and so this kind of slow organic growth happens. It's very beautiful. So this source, so my sister actually named this. I just wrote a poem and Holly named it the Alchemy of Welcome. And we actually brought this on Monday to Turning Towards Love, and which is our Monday night group that Holes and I do. And I had kind of written this in a moment of reflection and not really realized that it was significant or helpful or anything. And we were trying to find a source, a poem to read as an opener for our session on the Monday night group. And Holly goes, "Oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, that's brilliant, that's brilliant, that's brilliant." I said, "Really? I just, yeah, okay." So anyway, it really helped her. And then it seemed to be good enough to bring and to talk about. And I feel like it's an interesting one because somebody said to me on Monday what they did was that they took all the first lines and read them together, and then they took all the second lines and read them together. And it's almost like I think the way I was thinking was, what's my maybe like the first lines I could say are my habitual response, the kind of reactivity that I can be in. And then the second lines are when I become wise, or when I reflect, or when I stop, or when I draw on the friends that I know that can help me, or when I sit still enough to find something else that bubbles up other than my normal kind of reactivity. So you could hear it that way, is that the first line is my habitual reactions, and the second line is the wiser part of me, the deeper part or something. And also, I really love this kind of paradox thing about life that I can never figure out because that's not the nature of it. But it seems to me a bit like that as well. So I'm going to read. So this is called The Alchemy of Welcome. And maybe we can take a minute and just settle ourselves in the listening, and I'll settle myself in the reading of it as well. So just finding our feet on the floor a little. Maybe if you're walking, you could become present to the fact that you have feet. Maybe if you're sitting, you could become present to the fact that you're being held by whatever you're sitting on. And just breathe a little deeper and see what happens as we open into this poem. So, the alchemy of welcome. Perceive problems and they will stay. See the gifts and find your way. Hold on tight and it will fall. Open your hand and receive it all. Turn away and the issue spirals. Face into life and the field enlivens. Stifle anger and it takes hold. Welcome the rage and find your bold. Ignore the sadness and wither so small. Accept the feelings and trust the call. Stay on the surface and miss the meaning. Go down deep and find love's leaning. Tense yourself up and lose control. Relax into love and watch it unfold. Spinning around and to live is a labor. Stillness comes and you taste the flavor.
That's so wonderful, Lizzie. I'm just going to turn on a light here. For those of you who are listening, you can't hear that I'm doing this, but I'm kind of sitting a bit in the dark. So, I'm going to take up this playful invitation you made, Lizzie, to read your work in a, not in the way that you wrote it, but in the other way. So I want to say to everyone who's listening, you can always find the sources that we're using in their original form, either in our Facebook group, which is just Turning Towards Life, and you're so welcome to join us, which is where we go live, but also on the turningtowards.life website. So you can come back if you want and read Lizzie's words as she wrote them, as you wrote them. But I'm going to read the first line, the first lines all together, and then I'm going to read the second lines all together. With your permission, Lizzie. Perceive problems and they will stay. Hold on tight and it will fall. Turn away and the issue spirals. Stifle anger and it takes hold. Ignore the sadness and wither so small. Stay on the surface and miss the meaning. Tense yourself up and lose control. Spinning around and to live is a labor. See the gifts and find your way. Open your hand and receive it all. Face into life and the field enlivens. Welcome the rage and find your bold. Accept the feelings and trust the call. Go down deep and find love's leaning. Relax into love and watch it unfold. Stillness comes and you taste the flavor.
Oh, it's very, what is it? It's very clear when you read it like that. Separating them out. And in a way, I enjoy this because it's like, the more we might think of our wisdom and feel it and live into it, the greater our capacity grows for accepting our reactivity. So as you were reading it, I was feeling like, oh, it's okay that, you know, I grip on tight to things, because this is other thing too. So it's not like I didn't feel like I had to get rid of the first lines. When you read it, I felt like because the second lines exist, the first lines aren't such a big deal. Like, of course that's going to happen. Of course I'm a person interacting with other people and I have a life that's filled with kerfuffles like anybody else's life. And I will be controlling and I will be reactive and I will be annoyed at things and sad and all the things. And there's all these ways that I am able to cultivate the other parts of me that are really helpful, that are like the space into which those things can happen. And I'm not just them. So I'm not just turning away. I'm not just angry. I'm not just ignoring my sadness. There are other things happening that help me see that and accept that. And in the second lines, I can notice the first lines more clearly. That's how I felt when you read that.
It was wonderful. I found it wonderful hearing it both ways round. Hearing the proximity of the contractions and the tightness that we all get into, right up close against the invitation that goes with each one of another way. And then feeling the, in the way I got to read it, Lizzie, feeling the recognition of the so many ways in which I and all of us get caught, get stuck, get smaller than we might be, feeling all of that together without it being interrupted by a call to that something had to be different. And it's the first thing is, oh yes, I am that and I'm that and I'm that and I'm that and I'm that. That's true. And it seems to me so so important and so helpful to know ourselves as people who get stuck, who turn away, who get contracted, who contract away from life, who, and to know that in one way, just as part of what it is inevitably is to be a human, it feels very honoring, while at the same time then feeling, in reading the second pairs of lines together, feeling the kind of depth that we can be simultaneously present. And I love this way I was imagining this. It's hard if you're listening to see the way I'm going to show this with my hands, but I'll try and describe it. That there's a sort of surface way we can be where we get caught up in our own reactivity, and a deeper current that underlies it, which is where you talked about wisdom to start with, which is where our wisdom lies. And to be human is always to be for both to be present, but to be able to feel the wisdom and the depth that can be underneath all of our contracting and reactivity. And that feels to me both to be enormously honoring of what it is to be a human, and also to reuse the word you've used often, an opening to feel that underneath all of this, look, there I got caught again, I got self-critical again, I snapped at you again, I held too tight, I tried to force something that shouldn't be forced, all of that. And there's all of this, and a place that I can return to. Mm-hmm. And I appreciated that so much in your speaking to introduce these words and in the words themselves. I've been thinking about this a lot, see if I can give language to this. There's this really poisonous thread in our culture which goes, for anybody who gets interested in the possibility that they might wake up to a different way that they could be, that turns that into a linear journey, which goes, I was once a reactive person, and now I'm a non-reactive person, or I'm an enlightened person, or I'm a wise person, as if we would cut off the part of ourselves that's reactive, and that's what we're meant to do. And it's incredibly poisonous, both because it's impossible, I think. It's just it doesn't reflect that being a person with a body and in relationships and with feelings and all of that. And it sets up a comparison, like I'm a better person or a worse person. And it also splits us off from parts of ourselves. So no matter how loving I might be to my loved ones, there are times when I get caught in my own shame and my own fear and my own anger and my own wish to be in control, and I snap at people. And it doesn't help at that moment to go, oh, I'm meant to be this other person, I'm not meant to have this part. It's much more helpful to do the move that you're, this is another, you've written a few pieces that I like have this structure, Lizzie, which I think is so powerful, is this and this, this and this, this and this, is to know myself as someone who does lose sight of what I most care about, who does get caught up in being afraid, who does do things which I then wish I had not done those things, and there's repair needed, and there's to hold that with, and there's that of me that very often does know what to do and does know how to take care and feels more deeply in life. Seems to me that that's a much more honest and liberating way to come at ourselves than to imagine that somehow we have to turn ourselves into angels or saints or I don't know what.
Mm. Yeah, as you say that, I'm feeling like the tyranny of that that perception that there's a place to arrive at, and how the minute you get into that paradigm, it's complete torture because of what you're saying, that this is going to happen. So like our humanness becomes the way that we torture ourselves rather than the way that we accept ourselves or something. And the fact that there is also, I think it's, there's also for me something to do with like holding on to like peak experiences. So there are times in my life where I have felt extraordinarily free and able to be in stuff with spaciousness and expandedness. And that's beautiful. But I know the part in me that uses that as, oh, well, at that point in my life, I was whatever the word is, okay. You know, I was fine. And now look at me. And then I get to blame somebody for making me that way. So it also kind of spins out in different ways. This thing I think that the personality just naturally does, which is to set up a kind of success and failure narrative rather than being in the spectrum of being human and letting it all be here. And having standards for ourselves of the way that we're supposed to be according to something I read or somebody I know. And it feels really, really mean, actually, like a whole nother layer of suffering that we can add on to what is a painful experience sometimes of being a human anyway. It's like maybe it's another way that we kind of deflect from what we're actually experiencing too, which is to put ourselves on some kind of measuring stick at the same time as being in the experience that we're in. And therefore, we're not really experiencing what's given to us to experience in life. We are mostly measuring ourselves against some imaginable standard stick of whether I'm enlightened or settled or mad or whatever. We're putting a judgment call on how we're being. And it feels really unhelpful, actually. And to let it all be here and let us be who we are in any moment, whilst also being this consciousness that we are too, like we're learning, to see it as learning. And actually, wouldn't it be more helpful if we had a narrative at the beginning of things that we were told, like when we were really small and when we were at school and all that stuff, about the human journey? And when this arises, maybe we could welcome it. And when this arises, maybe we could say thank you to it. Like in this moment, I'm kind of astonished that there isn't anything for in the kind of mainstream world about how to be a human, how to work with this complex beings that we are, and how to live in a way. Like it's like we might need to be shifting some of our bigger cultural narratives about what it is to be a human being, in order for this to be commonplace rather than a small little podcast on Turning Towards Life, where we talk about these things and write poems. It just feels like, and you know, I see that we're also playing our part in shifting the narrative, because anyone listening to this gets to see that there's a different way of thinking than what we got taught broadly in our culture. And maybe different cultures teach this differently too. You know, I feel like maybe there are far more enlightened cultures than the predominant culture that I've been part of. And of course, I've been part of other cultures that teach things differently, but I probably entered them not in a mainstream way. You know, so living in India for a while, I certainly didn't like hang out in a standard school. I went to an ashram where clearly the narrative is very different. And so I feel like, wouldn't it be amazing if the mainstream world had a different predominant something to teach us how to be human, or teach us how to hold our humanity with generosity and an implicit feeling of benevolence rather than an implicit feeling of lack or competition or standards or economics. It feels like the world really needs that. Otherwise, it's so easy to just torture ourselves.
There's so much to say about our culture to even begin to pick apart what it is that we've forgotten. And I was thinking, as you were talking, Lizzie, about the narratives of progress that we have, that things go from being worse to being better, which I think sometimes things do, and that's wonderful. But when we mistakenly apply that to ourselves, the kind of it's a kind of splitting apart of ourselves. So we go about ourselves, we go bad person, good person. And many of us, I think, because we split like this, we feel like bad people but pretend we're good people. We wish we were good people, but we don't think we are. You know, we sort of feel like we're really on one side and we're pretending we're on the other side, instead of having a story about ourselves as being made up of many things simultaneously, many parts, and that there's a way in which we are always navigating holding difference in us. And it seems to me that when we have a understanding of ourselves like that, and we can call on our deepest care, we see that finding a way to bring in the wiser, deeper parts of us is really called for. That it doesn't do to hang out all the time in the contracted parts. It's put such a limitation on us. But to try and deny that those parts are here. And I was thinking, I was thinking about exam results. You know, since when did an exam result say, show us that we're a mix of all kinds of different things? Instead of there being a number, you know, you're a 97% person or a 33% person. Of course you're not. You're a bundle of all kinds of things. And that's in a way the mistake that we make, is we've learnt to flatten ourselves into one thing. And I was really touched by your language of benevolence, because it also seems to me that this is really deeply about care of other people too. That when we see ourselves as either on either side, you know, I'm the enlightened one, which either means you, Lizzie, are or are not one of the enlightened ones, and I will treat you accordingly. Or I'm not the enlightened one, I'm the terrible broken one, and now I either have to miss out on all of your suffering because I treat you like you're all sorted.
Yeah.
Once we're into that kind of splitting apart, and a couple of other parts of this. So when I wake up in the morning, I often feel like I'm in contact with mostly the first ones of these lines. I think I've said this to you before. I don't know what it is, the dreams I have, the way my body tightens when I'm lying down over a long period of time. And recently I've come across a Qigong body practice taught by our very, very lovely friend Steve March. I've been watching Steve's videos of him doing a opening, settling, finding yourself, and I've been practicing that along with him every day for a few days. And I can feel how important practice is. I can't swim in the ponds at the moment. That's the other thing that does it for me. But I can feel my way back into, there's all of this that I've lost contact with. And so when I wake up feeling very contracted, like the second line of your poem, it really helps to have ways to remember, oh, there's this too, and this too, and this too. And for me, body practice is very often the way of doing it, feeling my whole body can feel different, and then I know myself as being much wider and deeper in that way. That was the first thought I had, and the second thought I had has completely left me, so I won't try and say it now. Oh, I do know what it is, because it was how much it helps to talk with other people about how complicated we are. Yeah. Instead of pretending to you that I'm all together, is being able to tell you the ways in which I am together and in contact with my depth and my wisdom, and also tell you, I'm really confused, I'm really frightened, I just snapped at someone I love, I just snapped at you, I'm sorry, and I realized that I was in a thing. All of this opening to one another that we can do, which stops us telling this story of only being one thing at a time, is how we practice benevolence the kind of benevolence that you're talking about in our relationships with one another and with ourselves. I think it really helps us to do this with other people and not just be on our own little I'm trying to work with all of this on my own. It's such a relief to find out that other people are a mess and beautiful all at the same time.
Yes, it really, really is. I was just thinking as well, Justin, when I'm in the top lines of reactivity, I smallen, and the size to which I smallen is the size I allow other people to be. Like, that's all I have patience for. So when I'm contracted, I can't see anything bigger than the size to which I've got contracted to. So if I'm only in this part of myself that's like a centimeter by a centimeter, I can only see your centimeter by centimeterness. And so if I'm not practicing, cultivating, learning to be bigger than that, to be bigger than my reactivity, to be more spacious, wider, deeper, softer, there's no way I can even begin to make contact with the wider, deeper, softer parts of you, which are actually there. But my perception makes you into what you are. So if my perception is this big, what I will see of you is this big. And as you were saying that, I just got really clear on the relationality that gets born of our reactivity. I don't even know if relationality is a word, but the way we relate as born of our reactivity is so different to the way we relate as born of our spacious, wise places. And so to move through the world with just a small part of me, like the 97%, I'm a 97% person, then all I can see of you is what number you are. What did you get in your exams? Because I got 97%. And that's the tiniest little line of information you could possibly imagine. And yet, look how much of our world hangs on exams. And it's really quite something that there isn't that much of a counterpoint to that in our culture. There's very, very like swathes of different metrics to measure people. And yet, like these conversations we have, a lot of people are like, that's a bit weird, isn't it? You know, the majority of people, this is not a normal conversation for. This is not a everyday occurrence. And, you know, there happens to be about 1,000 people around the world who want to listen to this. And of course they tell other people, and I'm sure there's lots and lots more who would like to listen too, in a way. But the proportion of people who are in this way of reflecting is really small compared to just the general amount of people. And so it's a really tricky situation that we're in, measuring each other when we are completely immeasurable. And of course, sometimes it's helpful, like if you doing something that needs you to be a certain size, or someone to know you're a certain size so you can put something on your body, or your glasses need to be measured so that you can see the right distance or whatever. There are purposes for which measurement is really needed and properly useful. Certainly I, with the wrong glasses on, would not have the same life as I do with the right glasses on. But the fact that we then make that about humans just feels kind of tragic, really, when you cotton on to our magnificence and our mysteriousness and our magnitude and complexity, as you said, like the bundle of all different things. It's like only seeing one colour or only seeing one species of something, when actually we are this rambunctious thousands and thousands and millions of speciesness. We're not one thing.
This point you make that measurement is a value for eyesight, for your shoes, but also for other things like if I'm going to have surgery, I'd really like to have surgery from a doctor where other people have measured, taken some trouble to measure that she or he is capable of doing surgery, and somebody else is measuring in an ongoing way the outcomes that keep on happening to check that they're able to do it. So the measurement is so important. What I could hear in what you were saying is the mistake is whenever we, in whatever way we measure ourselves and take the measure to be us. So I am, so either measuring ourselves in your words on one or other side of each pair of lines, I am this or I am that, or when we measure ourselves on an exam result. And lots of other examples were coming to me whilst you were talking. Measuring ourselves on the number in our bank account, really common. Measuring ourselves on the size of our house or our property. Measuring ourselves and one another on the colour of our skin, or the ethnic group that we came from, or the religious or spiritual background we have, or our gender, or the shape of our bodies, or the age that we are. Or, I mean, once you start to look, it's so clear how much of the time we're up to this, flattening ourselves down to one measure and then assuming that that measure tells us everything about ourselves and everything about another person. So it could be just in a moment you snapped at me and now you are a terrible person, Lizzie, because I can only relate to that part of you and I can only relate to the part of me that's feeling hurt at the way you spoke to me, instead of second part of the line, I'm vast and you're vast. I'm way more mysterious and complicated and deep than this particular moment an interaction between us entertains, or than my history, or than the family I came from, or than... And it seems to me that is the invitation, that the bigger invitation in your words is for us to keep on remembering that we do get mistaken. We do, like you're saying, when we're just a centimetre wide, we do forget.
Yeah.
And even our owning up to the fact that we forget is part of the path into again and again and again remembering that we got mistaken because we got caught on one detail and made the detail as if it was the whole thing. When we make the measure as if it was the whole thing, when we make how you spoke to me as if it was the whole thing, when I make my feeling of feeling ashamed or afraid as if it was the whole thing. And each one of your second lines is a reminder that there's a way, 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 way bigger and deeper context in play all the time. Mm. Maybe that's our work, is to keep on learning how to remember that precisely at the moments that we forget.
Yeah, that's very beautiful, Justin. I think that's an amazing place to end as well. Remembering just that we're way more than when we're in our reactive state or anybody else's as well. Thank you so much for this. And, you know, who knew that this was the conversation that would come out of it? So lovely that we have these springboards from which come all of this conversation, and it meanders all over the place as well. So I want to say thank you to everybody for being with us today. We wish you a wonderful day wherever you are. And thank you so much for being with us. And we will be back next week with a source from Justin.
Well, thank you, Lizzie, for bringing us your magnificent and loving words.
Yeah.
Thank you, everyone, for being with us. Like you say, Lizzie, we'll see you next week.
Bye.
Bye-bye.